Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
We've got to get Mr. Voice Guy to update that to include the fact that you made it the 45th this year. Welcome to downtown St. Louis and the poker room of the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. I am Paul Harris, along with St. Louis's poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, who is just back from a weekend trip to one of the greatest, most beautiful places in the world. Of course, I'm talking about Bristol, Connecticut.
Actually, I was amazed at it. This complex has over 2,000 employees in it. It's its own individual town almost.
Mm-hmm.
Interconnected, they paint a blooming football field out there in the yard of it. There's basketball courts over here. It was awesome. I had a blast out there.
This is the worldwide headquarters of ESPN that you visited for a couple of days. And what were you doing up there?
Well, I did a number of things, but the basic purpose I was out there was for a new TV show called Inside Deal. Last week was the first week of it with Chris Moneymaker. This week I got to be the second guest.
Great. Now, this is online now. It's an online TV show.
Correct.
You can see it if you go to ESPN.com/poker. And the video player comes right up there, and Dennis's smiling face is there, and you're on with your buddy Bernard Lee, who we've had on the show several times, and also Laura Lane is the hostess of the show, right?
Correct, and Andrew Feldman is kind of a commentary on it, too. Like I said, second week of it, you can go on it at any time. You just go to ESPN.com, you can find it, but the easiest way is to go to ESPN.com/poker,
right,
and go straight to it. It was put on there today. It'll be on there for the rest of the week. You can also get in the archives. We just have a blast. We spend 30 minutes giving you what's happened in the last week of poker.
And they ask you about your run this year?
They ask me about that. They ask me about my, quote, Mount Rushmore of poker. They've asked me who I would love to play. Some of the questions were kind of off base and caught me a little off guard.
Yeah.
One of the questions they asked me said, if you wanted to sit down and play a game against one of the Cardinal Hall of Famers, who would it be?
Cardinal Hall of Famers?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, well, first of all, I thought about Gibson. I don't want to face Gibson anywhere. I don't care if it's across the table. I don't care if it's with a wiffle ball.
Talk about a guy who's going to stare you down.
No,
that's
kidding.
Bob Gibson.
No kidding. You know who I picked?
Who?
I picked Red Changes.
Why Red?
Because he's been there forever, and the stories this guy have would be amazing.
Oh,
he was there as a player. He was there as a coach. He's still there.
Yeah.
He's been there for 50 years.
Still a part of the St. Louis Cardinals organization.
And he's met all of the others.
Yep.
He could tell you stories about every blooming Hall of Famer on the list.
So you're not looking at it as who do I want to play poker against. You're looking at it as who would it be great to hang out with.
Oh, and I guarantee I did. And I would slow play the whole time. I would drag this on forever because I just think he could spend hours telling me stories about the Gas House Gang and Stan Musial and Bob Gibson and all the rest of them.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Right up to present day.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. Now, you mentioned they asked you about the Mount Rushmore of poker.
They did.
I saw this last week when Moneymaker was on there.
Right.
It's essentially name four guys who you would put up there on the Mount Rushmore of poker players.
Yep.
Tell me who you said.
Okay. Well, there's a choice that everybody has, obviously. Doyle Bronson, if you don't name him as one of the faces up there, you don't know poker.
Absolutely.
There is no person you can put up there any better than that.
Right.
Second choice I went with was actually Jack Vigneault himself.
The guy who created the World Series of Poker 40 years ago.
He supported it for years and years. He put his money into this thing, backed it. He is a member of the Hall of Fame. I just think he's a founding father. He's the one that should be up there on it.
Okay.
And then I went a little bit different. I picked Chris Moneymaker for number three.
Really? Why?
For influence on it. He changed the game in 03. He brought it out. He has made it mushroom, and he was a great ambassador of it.
Not only was he an amateur winning it at a time when the game needed it.
Correct.
But he had the name Moneymaker.
I know. It was just so perfect. It was amazing.
Interesting, because last week when they asked, he wasn't allowed to say himself, but somebody else said, well, Chris, wouldn't you put yourself up there for the influence you've had? He said, you told me I couldn't pick myself. So that's three. Who's your fourth?
The fourth one got tough because, I mean, look at all of them. You have Chip Reese, the greatest cash player around.
Yeah.
Phil Hellmuth with 11 braces. Johnny Chan with 10 of them in back-to-back wins.
Yep.
Johnny Moss. I mean, you just go on. The guy that had the whole camera invention. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of them you can pick from.
Yep.
All righty? So what I did, I didn't pick any of those.
You didn't?
I did not.
You didn't name me, did you?
I was close. You were right in the running. I thought about it for a minute. I want somebody who represents poker in its best light. I want somebody who's a true ambassador of it. I want somebody who, for years and years, has promoted the sport, the same as these other guys have done.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Sexton.
Mike Sexton, what a great choice.
Absolutely. Nobody else had picked him. I said, that's my man. That's the other one I want up there. You can't name a better face of poker, as far as I'm concerned, go with Doyle.
It's interesting you should mention that, because the nominees for this year's Poker Hall of Fame inductees were just mentioned, I just announced a few days ago, and here's who's on the list. Phil Ivey, Tom Dwan, Barry Greenstein, Dan Harrington, Tom McAvoy, Men the Master, Scotty Wynn, Eric Seidel, Daniel Negreanu, and yes, Mike Sexton. And I will tell you, Daniel Negreanu and Doyle Brunson both came out overwhelmingly in favor of Mike Sexton as their number one pick, purely because he's a great guy and a great ambassador for poker.
I couldn't agree with him more. I don't agree with the nominations here necessarily.
You don't?
But I absolutely agree. If Mike Sexton doesn't make it in there, there's a problem.
Who do you think is not deserving of being on that list?
Okay. In my opinion,
yes,
to be nominated for any Hall of Fame in any sport, you don't pick a rookie or a second or a third year man.
Okay.
I don't care how great he is.
All right. All righty.
Tom.
You got to have a lifetime.
You've got to have a lifetime.
Okay.
This is an achievement.
Yep.
You don't become a rookie of the year in any sport, football, baseball, I don't care what it is,
yep,
and get nominated for Hall of Fame.
Okay.
All righty. There's minimum requirements in every one of these other sports. I think there should be a minimum requirement here. I'm not sure what, 40 years of age, 15 years of playing, mm-hmm, I don't know, name it.
Okay.
Something like that. There should be some requirement for it.
X number of bracelets, perhaps.
No, because bracelets, you can be a great, great player and never win a bracelet. That's how tough they are.
Okay.
I don't want to limit it that way. But, you know, I just can't see anybody who is under 30, I don't care how fantastic they are,
mm-hmm,
I can't see them being nominated.
So you're saying Tom Dwan doesn't belong on this list?
He does not belong on the list. No offense to him, but he does not belong on the list.
Okay.
Period.
I would go along with you on two other people, only because while they're great players, capital G great players, I think it's still too early in their poker careers, and that's Phil Ivey and Daniel Negreanu.
I agree with that. And granted, I think they will be in there.
Yes.
They are going to be Hall of Fame players.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
But they're still playing. They're still active. Their best years may be ahead of them.
Yep. I agree. I think it's an easy argument for Barry Greenstein.
Oh,
it's
gosh,
an
yeah,
easy argument for Dan Harrington. It's an easy argument for Eric Seidel. I mean, 8 bracelets and a 25-year career.
And don't forget Tom McAvoy.
Tom McAvoy, who just won the Champions,
yes,
Invitational,
yes,
at the WSOP this year, the,
absolutely,
Champion of Champions. So, I think he's going to be on the list. Whether Men the Master and Scotty Wynn deserve to be on there, that we could easily argue. But I think there are some obvious yeses and some obvious nos.
Correct.
And, again, it's nothing against the three guys who we don't think should be on the list.
No.
They could be great players for years and years and years and years and years.
Absolutely.
But maybe just a little bit too early in their careers.
Absolutely again.
All right, I would go along with that. ESPN's World Series of Poker ratings in the first 2 weeks, down 8%. From last year. I don't think that means anything because we haven't gotten to the main event yet.
Well, exactly. Now, these are the preliminaries. This is the 40K, the Tournament of Champions.
Africa tonight.
Yeah, totally meaningless right now.
Yeah, the main event coverage starts next week. Speaking of poker on TV, have you seen the NBC show Face the Ace?
I watched the first painful hour of it.
That's a good way to describe it. It was fairly painful. For those of you who haven't seen it yet, it's essentially people who, I don't know if they qualified online or if they won satellites to get there or what it was, but they essentially get to go on TV and play against some Full Tilt poker pros.
Correct.
And in the first one, one of the guys won $40,000 and walked with,
right,
his 40 grand. You have a choice after winning 40 grand in your first match to keep the money and walk, or go to the second match to win $200,000 against another pro.
Right.
Then if you win that, you have a chance to go on to the third one for $1 million.
Right.
There was a guy who, on the first show, went past two pros, and then when it came time for the third pro, he ran into Gavin Smith, and this guy, Dan Topple, gave up his $200,000 to play heads-up against Gavin Smith, and you know as well as I do, in any poker game, I don't care who you're playing against, anybody can beat anybody at any time.
This is true.
And I'm surprised that a guy who walks onto a show like that turns down the $200,000 to go for the million, knowing the cards can go cold for anybody.
Well, knowing he's probably the poorer player of the two, too.
Oh, and you're absolutely at a disadvantage. Yeah. You're the underdog in every one of these matches.
You're getting 5-1, you know, going from 200 to a million. That's the incentive. That's why they try to get you to stay.
Yeah.
But you're 100% correct. You are the underdog. They just handed you $200,000.
Yep.
Now, I don't know about you, but $200,000 is still $200,000.
It's a lot of money to anybody.
Absolutely.
And I'll grant you, you do want to have that shot. Oh, I could have played for a million. Oh, I could have played for a million. There's no second-place prize here.
Correct.
Consolation prize is a warm handshake and a trip home.
And an aw, sorry.
That's it. So Don did, and Gavin Smith outplayed him.
Yeah.
And beat him. And then this other woman, Marsha Owens, who was the first female contestant, came in and took on Gus Hansen.
Ooh.
You couldn't make me play heads up with Gus Hansen with a gun to my head.
Wait, Gus only plays premium hands, right?
Right. Yeah. Good luck guessing what two cards Gus has.
He only plays cards that match. I guarantee the back.
On the back.
Other than that, there is no restriction.
Yeah, so he sent her back to Illinois with nothing, and we'll see. The ratings for that, by the way, horrible.
Really?
In last place, both Saturday nights that it's aired. Now, the show's going to be off for a month, and then it's going to come back on Saturday afternoons, I think at 1 o'clock Central for a while. Who knows if that show has any kind of future?
Well, people keep trying the different shows, the poker ones. One of these is going to hit. They're just, it's too popular a sport. It's going to.
Well,
it may not be this one.
There are two things that people have proven that they want to see on TV. High-stakes poker on the Game Show Network
Absolutely.
On Sunday nights, and the main event of the World Series of Poker on ESPN.
Yeah.
There used to be a third, World Poker Tour, but that's kind of gone by the wayside. No offense to our friend Mike Sexton at all, but he knows as well as I do that the ratings for that are down. The World Poker Tour just got sold.
Yep.
For what?
$9.1 million.
$9.1 million. Would you ever have thought at the height of the popularity of the WPT that you could buy the entire thing for $9 million?
And my figures are probably wrong. At one time, I think it was back in 05 or 06, it was supposedly worth $135 million.
Wow.
Yeah. That was just for the stock and everything.
$9 million's not even a good value bet for $135 million.
Wow, I'm trying to remember. Somebody needs to help me out with this. There was something with Doyle Bronson looking at buying it.
Yeah.
And it runs into my mind that it was like $600 or $700 million package they were putting together with that and some others.
Unbelievable.
Wow, I'm trying to remember that. I'm probably off on my figures, but it's something like that. It was huge.
Tremendous.
Yeah, 9.1.
One other thing I want to mention here in the open, and by the way, the poker coach, Joe McGowan, will be with us in a few minutes. And then later on, we're going to introduce you, speaking of poker on TV, to two guys who are part of a new show that's on G4 TV starting this Sunday night. It's called 2 Months, $2 Million. And this is four guys who are friends, who are high-stakes online players, who got moved into a mansion in Las Vegas and had 2 months to try to make $2 million just playing poker. We're going to meet two of those guys later on in this
now
hour.
You put four guys, all single, in a house in Vegas.
In their 20s.
In their
20s. Yeah.
Yeah, they did nothing but poker, I'll bet.
We'll find out. They'll be with us in about 15, 20 minutes. The last thing I want to mention here, speaking of Vegas, is there was a story online in the last week or so of a dealer at the Bellagio who got caught stealing from a pot in Bobby's room.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, he had a little device up his sleeve where he could flick a chip out of a pot into the sleeve of his shirt, and it would stay stuck in there, and he could hold on to the chip.
And the chips in Bobby's room are nice chips.
Well, here's what happened. He was dealing, and, you know, in Bobby's room, they play mixed games.
Yeah.
Could be anything when you sit down with those guys. There's usually a rotation of anywhere from 8 to 10 games, as Barry Greenstein has told us. In this particular game that they were playing, it was Omaha 8. Well, in Omaha 8, you have a lot of split pots, high, low.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the people who got half of the pot counted his stack and realized he had not gotten back as much money as he'd put into this heads-up game against the other guy. He's 1,000 short. The other guy counts his chips because now they figure, well, it's not. They didn't think the dealer stole it. The other guy must have gotten the extra 1,000 chip. He counts his. He's got the same amount as the other guy. They're both 1,000 short. Turns out the dealer had put two of those $1,000 chips up his sleeve, and now he's caught.
Oh, wow.
He is obviously going to be facing, well, in the old days, it would have been some backroom justice, right?
In the old days, we never would have heard about it.
He's facing some criminal charges here. But you know this is not the first time this guy was doing this.
Obviously not. I mean, you know, well, you assume not.
Well, if you're going to do that, you're not going to do it in the small games. You're not going to do it in the 4-8 game or even the 5-10 game. Maybe you're going to do it in the 30-60 game where they're playing with $10 chips. Not even there. I think you might be doing it in the black chip game. Bellagio has a 100-200 limit game that goes almost every day, so you might be able to flick a couple of black $100 chips up your sleeve, and who knows how many times he's done that or how many games he's done that with, but if I were the Bellagio, I would immediately announce all of our dealers will have short sleeves from now on.
That's a good idea.
Just eliminate the possibility. Eliminate the question.
Wow.
Isn't that a heck of a story?
And I know the guys that play in Bobby's room.
Yeah.
There are some people that are not very happy now.
No.
Wow.
And they keep a pretty close eye on the pot.
Absolutely do.
Yeah.
These are the pros of the pros.
Yep.
Wow.
We got to take a break. We'll come back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table in just a moment here. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, will join us. If you've never been to Lumiere, this is a great place to play poker and a great place to come down and play the slots or any of the table games, craps, roulette, ultimate hold'em, whatever it is you want to play, they've got it here. I played in their monthly no-limit hold'em tournament this weekend, the one with a 325 buy-in and 5,000 in chips and 45-minute blinds. It was a terrific tournament. Tony and the gang here do a great job running that. I just wish I had gone a little bit deeper. I made it through about three rounds, and that was it for me. But a huge turnout. In fact, the thing was sold out 2 hours before the event started, which you don't hear with a lot
absolutely
of poker tournaments
not
these days.
That's true.
Lumiere is a great place to come. If you are in downtown St. Louis, you need to get down here when you're here and come play with us, particularly on Tuesday nights when we've got our big 5-10 game going on, which Dennis and I jump into right after we get off the air.
I can see the table from here.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back in a moment. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts are on thechipleader.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Put on your sunglasses, stack up your chips, and hide those tails.
Yes, he's going all in, and Chan has him. Johnny Chan, the master.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
We're in downtown St. Louis with the Lumiere Place Final Table, which is brought to you in part by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net, it is the place you can play against me. Just look at this. It's free to download and play there and learn your games. It's an award-winning 24/7 support on it. It's fully licensed and regulated. It's got the best software and the best game selection anywhere around there. I'm telling you, if you want to learn any game of poker, you need to go on there.
Now, you told us last week that you've been playing Raz online a little bit lately. How's that going for you?
I am learning how to play it. I am losing money, but I am learning how to play it. All righty? And also, they are the sponsor of The Inside Deal, the show
you're
on
ESPN.
ESPN.
Let's give another plug for that, by the way, ESPN.com/poker. We're plugging it, of course, because Dennis is on this week's episode, and it is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
Yeah. And right now, remember, their WCOP is going on. WC, the World Championship of Online Poker.
Yep, the WCOOP.
WCOOP. I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, go to PokerStars, guys. I'll be there.
All right, let's bring in the poker coach, Joe McGowan, now. Hello, Joe. How are you this evening?
Doing great, Paul. How are you?
Good. Did you hear the story we were telling before the break about the Bellagio dealer stealing money out of a pot?
I did. I was listening in. I was surprised. No, I think the short sleeves would definitely help, but ironically, in our game that I play in the Palm Springs area, about 2 years ago, in the very small game, you know, 3-6 limit, 4-8 limit, 20-40 limit. We had a dealer that was stealing apparently for a long, long time, which is what aggravated me. The casino watched him through surveillance for months before the police came in. You know, they made a big
spectacle
about it, which was great. You know, I wasn't there when it happened, and they took him out and arrested him right there at the table with about five different policemen. But he
why would they let it go for months?
Well, that was the question I had. Why would you let this go on for months? Once you see him doing it a couple times, I mean, that should be more than enough. But maybe they wanted to build a big case. I don't know the exact detail, but 100%, he was stealing out of the pot from the players. But he wasn't doing $1,000 chips. He was doing $1, $2, you know, a $5 chip.
That's ludicrous.
That's low rent is what that is.
Yeah, that's ludicrous.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you think about it, though, if you're doing it, like, per pot or every other pot, you know, you're dealing, X amount of hands per hour, that adds up to a pretty big amount. And he's just putting them, you know, when he broke down change or whatever he did, you know, he kept it separate and palmed them out. And then, he got a $2 tip, and then he'd sneak in an extra chip or two or whatever he did and make change. He got away with it for a long, long, long time.
You know, Joe, I think it's important for me to say right now, we have a lot of friends who are dealers, and we work in a place here at Lumiere where there are absolutely great dealers, and they do a terrific job. And the guys that we're talking about here are criminals who are less than 1/100 of 1% of the dealers that we deal with on any kind of basis in all the casinos that all of us have played in. These are the exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, anytime you have a group of people together in any industry, I don't care what it is, there's always a couple of rotten apples.
Yep.
Just unfortunately, in this case, they got publicized, so not everybody knows about it.
Absolutely right.
The casinos deal with it for years. You know, people card counting, you know, is the one thing that may be legal that they frown upon, but then they got the guys that rob the slot machines with the little wires and all the tricks and all the different devices and different elaborate scams to rip off the casinos. You'd figure they, you know, with the money in poker, that, you know, the bigger games, it'd be some angle, some guy or some people might shoot for. But thankfully, 100%, you're right. It definitely is not the norm, and it is extremely rare. But when it happens, as a poker player, you know, I wanted to kill the guy.
Well, no kidding. That's why I like the idea. Even though it took longer, maybe they were trying to make sure it was an ironclad case, and they wanted to publicly do this. Bring him in, arrest him at his seat, you know, drag him out of there, basically, so everybody sees it. You know, that humiliation. This guy can't go to a poker room anywhere in that whole area, ever.
Right.
In all of Vegas, probably.
All right,
Joe, let's move on to something I wanted to talk to you about, and also Dennis. I wanted your perspective on a hand that I played a couple of days ago. This was in a 5-10 game, and I want to put you guys in my position and find out what you would do and how you would have handled this situation, okay?
Okay.
This is a table of almost all good players. There are a couple of weak players at the table. They're not involved in this hand, okay? There are three limpers in the hand. You're on the button, and you wake up with a pair of queens. So it's a 5-10 game. There are three limpers in there. So there's already $45 in the pot. You make it 60, and you get two callers.
Okay, so this All is right, what so you pre- did.
Yeah, so pre-flop, you're on the button with a pair of queens, and there's now $205 in the pot. The flop comes out, queen, seven, deuce. The seven deuce of diamonds. So you've got top set, couple of diamonds on the board. Both of the other players check to you. What do you do in this situation with a pot of $205? And again, I will tell you, we're playing pretty good players here.
Okay, well, you know, first thought is, you know, what would I do? I would definitely lead out, because I lead out almost every single time. You know, I always continuation bet. I bet when I have it. I bet when I don't have it. And here's a spot, you know, I have it. They're probably half the time not putting me on it, because I play pretty aggressively. I play a lot of pots, and I bluff a lot. So a lot of the guys in my game know that. I'm the player that will get paid, you know, in my kind of local game where, again, I'm comfortable and I'm playing a little bit more aggressively. If I'm playing maybe, you know, somewhere at the Bellagio or a bigger game, a little out of my comfort zone, and I'm playing relatively tight, maybe I'd play it differently. But I think you have to, you know, from a poker coach standpoint, you have to know, again, your image. So for you, you know, Paul, and this was you, do you normally continue whether you miss or not, even though you had two callers? A lot of times a player, if they get five-way action, you know, to a raise and the flop comes ace-king, you know, something they put the other players on and they miss, they would never continue. So it's easy to put that player in a hand. So right there, that's the type of thinking that I have, you know, before I bet or I don't bet or how much I bet.
Okay. Dennis, how much would you bet if you were going to continuation bet there?
Well, actually, I had just written down almost exactly what Joe said. This is getting scary, Joe. my basic comment down here, I would play the hand however I had been playing the whole time at this table. If I'd been making normal continuation bets, I would make a continuation bet here on it. And a normal continuation bet for me would be somewhere around 60% of the pot on that. So if you're betting somewhere from 140, 150, 160, you know, that in my bet, normally the way I play, that would be it. That's what I would bet.
All right. Here's my attitude,
Paul,
when I... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I can add to that then. You know, I had a little breather there with Dennis coming in, and that's great. And, of course, we seem like we're both in agreement. I think also, you know, I always, you know, say I had, you know, I was stealing there and I had 3-4 clubs, you know, and I was making a raise because there's some limpers and I want to get a heads up or I just want to take it down, maybe my image there. I do a quick scan of the players. If my read is nobody has anything, everybody missed, nobody's interested, you know, maybe I let one peel off there and hope, you know, an ace comes or a king or some other type of action card or even a spade. You know, if you said there were two spades out there, now
no,
someone...
No, two diamonds. Two diamonds.
Okay, even a diamond. Maybe now someone will have four to the flush and pay me a bet on the turn. If my quick read is, wow, that guy's strong, or, oh, he's really interested, now I'm definitely doing a continuation bet. So that, for me, might be my top thing of what I continue, how much, and you know, that's really what shapes it probably the most for me, coupled with what Dennis and I both just said.
Okay, I agree with both of you, which is why I bet $125, which was 60% of the pot. good call on your part there. And people would say, well, why would you do that when there are two diamonds on the board? Why would you give somebody a chance at hitting a diamond on the turn? Because in the game of poker, if this is my philosophy, in the game of poker, if you're just going to take down the pot there, you're never going to get the big pot. You got to, at a certain point, let a guy go for that one card. If he misses it there, you may have to force him to put a lot more money in if he's going to see the river. But at that point, if you want to play bigger pots and not just play all small ball poker, I think you don't check there to make it a free card, but you want to put in a little bit of money so that you, while you may get one or two callers there, you're at least getting more money into the pot.
Well, not only that, but if a diamond does come on the turn and the guy acts like he has the flush, you still got 10 outs.
Right.
Correct. You've got a great redraw on
correct.
It.
And so, and if that's the case, I've kept the pot small. I didn't make it 300, and he calls with his flush draw. Who knows?
Right.
Okay, so I make it 125. Go ahead.
The other thing there is, Paul and Dennis, for our listeners that might be beginner level or maybe even slightly intermediate, a lot of players will say, I want to put it down right there. I'm going to protect my hand. I don't want someone to get lucky on me and hit a diamond. You know, and they'll way overbet the pot to scream to everybody, I got it. I either have aces or a set, and I'm taking it down here, or I have kings, or whatever it is. No, I would never do that because it does kind of give away your hand, and it kills your action. You got to be able to gamble a little bit when you're a huge favorite and take some chances. So I like the way you're
going
with it.
I actually wanted this to look like a continuation bet, like I only had ace-king, and I want them to call, and we'll take a card off there, which is exactly what happened. I got one folded, and the other player called. Now, this other player is loose, aggressive. He's pretty good at figuring out what's going on in a hand. We're not talking about a complete amateur here. But he calls, and so now we've got $455 in the pot. Now, the turn is another deuce. Queen, seven, deuce, deuce. So I have filled up on the turn. He checks. If you're me, what do you do now?
You want to go first or I will, Joe? Doesn't make any difference.
Well, why don't you go ahead and go first? I would take a guess we're probably going to be close to the same.
Well, okay. On this one, if that happened to me, I would hope he thought I had the continuation with the ace king or something. When he checks, then I'm checking to catch another card. And then he's got to put me at maybe eights or nines under the queen. And when you called, you put in queen, or you got an ace king or whatever. I probably would check there. I got position behind him.
Joe?
Well, again, the way that I play, I really need to take a minute to evaluate him of what I think he has. You know, what type of range of hands that I have. What does he look like? What did he look like when he put the chips in the pot on the flop? Was he concerned with what the other player was going to do or not going to do? You know, what type of hand do you think he had? How strong do you think he was? If you think he's got a hand, then 100%, you know, I'm betting here. If you think, you know, he doesn't have a hand and he's going to fold and now he believes you and your image is such, well, Paul might do a continuation bet, but once he gets called, he's not going to fire again on the turn. You know, if he's got ace king, he's going to check there. So, you know, that's a little more the way that I might think of the hand, you know, but you could definitely check it and mask your hand if you said this guy's loose aggressive and he may fire too. So there's a couple ways you could go with it, which I think are normal and fine. I might actually tend towards betting there, but I'm not going to, you know, of course, if I think the guy is weak, unless I think he'll take a shot and bluff. So there's so many variables that come into it that you got to make quick decisions when you're playing and you're in the hand. And that's how I play, you know, and how I would play the pot. So I can't say for sure, oh, I would definitely do this. Mine is very heavy read dependent on what I think this player will do and what he thinks my image is.
Yeah, the one thing I would not do is make a small bet out there. Some $150 bet or whatever.
Into a 450 pot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Right.
I agree with you, Dennis. I checked the turn, my thinking being I want him to think that I've got ace-king or an underpair and allow him to either bluff the river with whatever comes, or if a diamond comes and he's on the diamond draw, good, I want him to catch up a little bit, make his flush, since I've got the full house. So I do check there.
I'd more tend to bet then if I thought he had the diamonds, because I want him to pay for that draw, and he will pay. Because if the diamond misses on the river, now you missed a spot where he would have called. You know, if he is on diamonds, now he's going to fold the river. So I tend to try to build the pot a little bit and maybe actually bet if that's, you know, a strong possibility of what I put him on, being that it was, you know, multi-way action of at least three players pre-flop, you said, right? Not four?
Right. Three players pre-flop and then heads up on the flop. So anyway, we get to the river, and sure enough, there's the nine of diamonds.
Okay.
He thinks for about 5 seconds and fires 300 into the pot. Again, there's about 455 in the pot. He fires 300 in. Now,
how much you
got me,
behind?
We've each got I've got at this point about 1,700, 1,800 left. I started the hand with about $2,000. He's got me way covered.
Okay.
He's got probably about at least as much, maybe 1.5 to 2 times what I've got in his stack. So
is there
he
a maximum buy-in to the game?
I think the max buy-in is 2,000, and he'd had a pretty good run. So he's up to maybe 3,500 or 4,000. So he's pretty deep, and I'm pretty deep. He makes it 300. I've got the full house. The flush card has hit on the river. We don't know if he has it or not. We don't know exactly what he has. But what do you do now?
Well, again, my answer is, you know, what does he look like? You know, what can you get anything off of him? You know, when he put the chips in at all, was he saying anything? Did you have any strength tells whatsoever? Or do you think he's bluffing? You know, no matter what, of course you're raising. The question is how much? And what do you think you can extract from him? That's
right.
Your mission right there. How
right.
much will he call? You know, what can I get out of him here? You know, is this a guy that's going to call off his entire stack and thinks I'm bluffing because I've been bluffing the last 2 weeks and he's played with me for 2 weeks? Is this a guy that just sat down and I hardly know the guy, you know, and has a different image of me from just today? So now your mission is, what will this guy pay me here? What makes sense? What will he believe? What adds up to this whole story with the way the hand's played out? And what, you know, what do you put him on? Do you think he looks strong and has the nut flush? You might be able to go all in. He might call you with a pair of boards.
All right. If you're going to raise, how much are you going to raise? That's the question. He's made it 300. You're obviously going to raise. If you think that this guy's got a hand and he's not bluffing, Dennis, what do you do?
Well, there's two levels you can do based on what Joe's saying here, which I do agree with on it. You either come over, he raised the 300, you got 750 in the pot. You can make a value bet on it that he's going to cry call of 400 to 500 on it probably. And you probably can get that out of him because he's got to have something on there, you would assume.
Raise him 400 to 500.
Raising 400 to 500 more on
okay.
top of it. The other thing you can do, and I like to do occasionally, is make an overbet. There's now 750 in the pot.
Yep.
Bet about 900. You said you had about 1,700 or 1,800 left?
Yes.
Ooh, that's over half your chips. That's not going to... Bet about a size of the pot. You know, maybe just 100 over it. Somewhere around $800 on it. Look like you're trying to buy the pot if you can in any way. That's your other option. If you shove here, honestly, I don't think it looks good. But I would make either a value bet or I'd make a little over bet of the size of the pot and see if you can buy the pot there at that. If you put some 1,100 or 1,200 in, that's too much of your stack, he's going to look very suspicious. If you're going to go that high, you might as well shove it all.
All right, here's what I did. Here's what my thinking was. I'm thinking to myself, if he has the flush and I raise to 800, 900, 1,000, he's going to know that I have the full house and he's probably going to make the laydown. So it doesn't matter to me whether I raise to 800 or 1,000 or I shove my whole stack in here, because either way, I'm not getting any more money. However, if he has a pair of sevens, which means he flopped a set, middle set, or if he had a pair of nines and just called the flop thinking that I might have ace-king, I checked the turn, he hit his miracle nine on the river, if he has a pair of nines, he might put me on the flush because I checked the turn, and now his $300 is like him value betting. I'm 100% sure he doesn't have quad deuces, by the way. Let's get that out of the way. But anyway, if I think that he's got a full house.
That would be a bad ending to the story.
Yeah.
if he's got a full house and if I shove, he'll think that I can't possibly have a pair of queens, because who would overbet the pot so much if he wants to get paid? That way, he would put me on the nut flush and he would call me with his smaller full house. Also, if he has nines full of deuces, maybe he puts me on sevens full of deuces, in which case I think he's going to call as well and double me up. Now, I know this is, what do I think, he thinks, I think, he thinks, I have. I know that's what kind of thinking that we're doing here. But I think the only way I get called for the smaller raise that you're talking about, Dennis, is if he has maybe a non-nut flush like King-Jack or Jack-10. My attitude was, if I wanted to double me up here, I have to shove, and that's what I did.
I don't know, but what I wouldn't go a step further than that. If this guy had pocket nines and cut the Miracle Nine on the river, which is one of the hands you're talking about,
yeah,
you put out whatever you put out, he's going to come back over the top of you probably. I would. I'd assume I've got the best hand right there.
Okay.
And if you have queens, I pay you off. So I'm trying to get you all in.
Okay.
I might even do that with sevens with a boat there. I don't know. If he's got a full house and you've got a full house, somewhere or other, probably all the money's going to get in
right
at this stage.
So if all the money's going to go in anyway, I'm going to put the money in and make him make that decision. Because otherwise, I really do think it looks like he's going to have to make the laydown if he's got the flush.
Well, here's the other tough thing, too, Paul. If he does have the flush, he paid a lot for it to get there. So he's not going to want a 10 to let it go. And typically people, you know, if you said he's kind of a decent player and they're mainly good players in the game, he probably wasn't calling you with a small flush because I imagine he thinks you're a relatively good player and relatively solid. So he probably puts you on a hand. So he's probably not calling with, like, you know, whatever you want to pick, 8, 9 of diamonds or something. He's probably got the nut flush if he had the flush. The way the story's going, I have to kind of think maybe he had a small full house of some type. But, you know, I think, it really goes on what you think he'll pay. And I think no matter what you raise, if he's bluffing, he's not going to pay 2 cents. You know, he can't bluff call. So if he has a hand, all the hands are brutally tough laydowns. He's probably not going to lay down any full house, even bottom full house, hoping that you just have a flush and the pot's too big and he's getting pot odds and woe is me, and he'll probably call you anyway. Even with bottom full house, possibly he'll call you. In nut flush, he may even, you know, call you and hope that you just have a smaller, you know, flush, or maybe he's not good enough to really analyze the complete hand.
Well, but here's what happened.
I like the all-in play.
Here's what happened. He thought for a long time, and he started talking out loud, asking why I bet so much, and I'm giving off no information. And the longer he thought, the more I was 100% sure he didn't have the flush, and the more likely it was that he was going to pay me off with a smaller full house. And he counts out his chips, and he looks ready to call, and then he pauses again and looks at me and says, if you have queens, why would you raise all in? You'd want me to pay you off so you'd only make it 1,000. Why are you moving all in if you have queens? Which is exactly what I want him to think.
All right. Cool.
He's talking himself into it.
Yeah.
And as Joe likes to say, he cry calls. I turn over my queens. He mucks his hand. I don't know what he has, although later he claimed that he did have nines. I don't 100% believe him because he's a poker player. But even if he had the flush, whatever it was, I took down the pot.
All right,
doubled up in the hand.
Good job.
Now, let me ask you an etiquette thing. Did anybody
yes.
else at the table say to him when he mucked, hey, what you have? was anybody you know, that bad in etiquette or that inexperienced? Because almost everybody in the, you know, most games, medium to smaller games, somebody, you know, whether it's an out-of-town guy or
yeah.
someone new or whatever, or even someone's been playing forever that's just obnoxious, what you muck, what you have, what you call
yeah.
with, you
know,
which I think
yeah.
is horrible, horrible thing to do.
I agree. All right, we're all out of time for our poker coach segment tonight, but I'm glad you guys could help me with analysis of that hand as we went through it. I think there might be a lesson to be learned there for some of our listeners. And Joe McGowan, the poker coach, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks, guys. See you, Dennis. See you, Paul.
Take care.
Joe's segment is brought to you by One Time Apparel. This is the clothing that you need as a poker player. It was a big hit when Kevin Steffen, the St. Louis poker player who's behind the company, introduced it at Pokerpalooza at the 2009 World Series of Poker. And it was just a big smash hit at the World Poker Open down in Tunica. Lots of poker players there, lots of fans, lots of pros stopping by the booth, buying up his sweatshirts and baseball jerseys and polo shirts and T-shirts and hats as well. He's got a 100% cotton PK sports shirt in 7 colors. He's got an organic T-shirt in green or 8 other colors in 3 different designs. For the ladies, he's got scoop neck T-shirts and ringer T-shirts and pink camouflage hats. For the guys, he's got fitted hats and flexible hats and hats with 4 aces that come in red or white or black. a portion of your money when you buy stuff from onetimeapparel.com is going to go to great charities here in the St. Louis area and all across the country. And Kevin supports the American economy by using local vendors and suppliers and manufacturers. Every time I wear one of his hats or shirts, people always ask me, where can I get one of those? OneTimeApparel.com is the website. Go there, charge it to your credit card, or use PayPal. If you're a poker player, you want OneTimeApparel.com. We're back in a moment with two guys from a brand new poker reality show called 2 Months, 2 Million. Here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance. Dennis has been going to Washington every few months to help lobby our senators and congressmen on getting poker legal everywhere in the world, online and off. And Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey has just in the last week introduced the Internet Skill Games Regulation Bill that the PPA has been pushing for. He says the major difference between this and similar bills is that it only addresses online poker and other games of skill. He says it would establish a regulatory framework allowing online poker companies to register in the United States and put in place consumer protections, including age verification procedures and blocks for states where online poker isn't legal yet, and works out a way for them to tax it, and on and on and on, essentially reversing the horrible decisions made a couple of years ago in the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, the UIGEA. This is what the Poker Players Alliance fights for you, the poker players of America and the world, in fact. You can go to their website, theppa.org, theppa.org, and join up and become a member and join the alliance. It only costs $20 to become a member of the PPA, and help us all support the game we love, poker. Now, there's a new reality poker show starting this Sunday night on the G4 network, on G4 TV. It's called 2 Months, 2 Million, in which four friends move into a mansion in Las Vegas and spend 2 months trying to win $2 million doing nothing but playing poker. Although, as you pointed out, Dennis, you're in Las Vegas. You're not doing nothing but playing poker. We were supposed to have two guys from the show on tonight, but we've only been able to track one down. If he's in Las Vegas, I can understand why. Let's say hello to Donnie Stern. Welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table. Donnie, how are you tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
That's going great.
So, Vegas, in my 20s, single, private house. Man, you got to be smiling.
Well, I'm back in New York now, but... Yeah, it was a good summer. I can't lie.
Excellent. Yeah, visited by the Playmates. I mean, I'm hearing all sorts of things about this show. Was it as much fun as it looks like it was?
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of fun. It was a bizarre experience for me. You know, I'm not used to being followed around by camera everywhere I go. I'm not used to, you know, waking up every morning and have to put on a mic pack and all that. But, you know, at first it was a little bit shocking and a little bit weird to do it all, but... It got used to it after a little while, and definitely just embraced it, and I think we all had a great time.
That was the stuff he had to get used to, not the playmates coming over. That's a regular part of Donnie's life.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was... What do you want me to say? I mean, that was just like one day of you know, promotions and
you're what, 22?
Everybody keeps talking about the day the Playmates came over. I mean, yeah, it was cool, but I mean, believe me, it was not like one of the top 5 or 6 or 10 days of the summer even.
All right, well, let's ask the simple question. What was the top day of the summer?
Or one of the top?
Well, I guess my best day of the summer was actually the day before we started filming. I came in fourth place in the 40K event at the World Series. That was a pretty good day I had. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I can't really talk about the best day on camera because, you know, I'm not allowed to reveal any plot spoilers.
Oh, that's right, because the show hasn't aired yet. You can't tell us any behind-the-scenes secrets about what actually is going to be shown on the show.
So you were in fourth place in the 40K, so you were at the final table with Greg Raymer?
Yeah, that's right.
Jeffrey Pollock was over there sitting. I was sitting right beside him. I was watching you. I didn't put two and two together. I'm sorry about that.
Congratulations on that deep run.
Excellent. Excellent job. Noah Swartz was there. I mean, several guys I knew at the table.
Isaac Haxton and Vitaly Lunkin were the final two there. Who was the one who knocked you out?
Isaac Haxton knocked me out.
Do you remember the hand?
Yeah.
Of course you remember the hand. What am I saying? Of course he remembers.
I can't remember. It was some... it was two hands back to back. I got in with fives. He had king seven suited, and I doubled him up. And then the very next hand, I had like eight big blinds, and I shoved with queen ten. And he called with ace king, and he won that one again. So,
Standard poker, eight big blinds, queen ten.
Absolutely,
no problem.
So, in the 2 months that you were doing this show for G4, what stakes were you guys playing?
I mean, we played pretty much everything from, you know, 200, 400, no limit and PLO all the way down. At times we were playing, you know, 10-20, even some 5-10, depending on how much action we could get or, you know, what was running at the time, basically.
Well, should we ask him if he played in Bobby's room, if he knows any dealers there?
Did you go play live high-stakes action over the Bellagio?
Yeah, we played a bit of live high-stakes games, too. Mostly we play online, but, you know, it was probably something like 85% to 15% online to live. So we did get in some live games.
Tell us about your live high-stakes experience, particularly if you played in Bobby's room, something Dennis and I have not had the chance to do yet.
I didn't play in Bobby's room. Actually, I played 50-100 a bunch of times at Bellagio, but it never was actually in Bobby's room. I guess 50-100, we're not cool enough to go in the room. But,
actually, the stakes go a little higher there.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, add another
I mean,
zero.
There was a 100, 200 game running there that I think Jay played in a bit. I mean, I played there last summer. I guess we just didn't have as much time this summer, but, you know, towards the end of the summer, I wish we could have gotten more of an opportunity to go there because the action was just blowing up there at the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Those guys were just insane. People were playing 15K a point Chinese.
Yeah. Doyle talked about that. Phil Ivey was over there. He would win a bracelet and then run over there to get in the game real quick.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night.
Donnie, how much did you start with at the beginning of the 2 months? I know your goal was for the four of you collectively to make $2 million. How much did you start with?
I mean, we started with whatever we had. I mean, it was no different than if we weren't on the TV show, what we would have been playing with, you know? I mean, we were just playing with our own bankroll, basically.
Yeah.
It wasn't
they
like
wanted a net profit of $2 million,
like a separate
whatever
fund
they start with.
Or something for it, really.
Oh, I thought the G4 gave you a stake to start with, and then that's what you played with. You're telling me you played with your own money?
We were playing with our own money, G4. Yeah. I wish G4 gave us a stake to play with. That would have been nice. But I don't think they have that kind of cash.
Were there prop bets and side bets between the four of you?
I mean, yeah, there's you know, I mean, one day when we went golfing, there's prop bets, and, you know, every meal there's credit card roulette and prop betting on pretty much everything you can imagine throughout the show, but there weren't any prop bets like on, you know, who would make the most money or anything like that.
Was there some sort of penalty for the guy who had the worst week?
Yes, there was. You must have heard about that.
I haven't heard about that. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, at the end of every week, basically, whoever had the worst results, whoever lost the most or won the least, had to do a penalty stunt, which was basically some form of an extremely, like, public humiliation in Las Vegas.
Right in the crowd.
I honestly, like, I mean, I can't tell you what they were, but they are just so absurd and ridiculous. I mean, they easily, you easily could have taken, like, those scenes and taken them out of our show and put them in, you know, like, Jackass or Tom Green show or something like that. They were just pretty much on that level of
I am flat out getting jealous. I would have loved to have done this in my 20s.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, you can't tell us about that. Can you tell us what the tilt room was?
Yeah, I can tell you the tilt room. Tilt room, I mean, basically, is just a, this was Jay's idea to set it up. It was like we took a section of the garage and
Unreal.
Got sort of boarded up and put, you know, like a black garbage bag and tarped it up and inside put in, you know, pretty much anything that can break and a collection of weapons, basically, you know, baseball bat, hockey stick, golf club, anything you can imagine. We had a sledgehammer halfway through summer, we got one, and we put in, you know, like 25 watermelons into the room and then just rampage through them, basically, if you were feeling on tilt or you wanted to.
They got turned into Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. How much deposit did you put on this house?
Oh. Oh, we can't talk about that either.
Did you get to play against any pros?
What do you mean? Of course, we played against only pros. I mean, the stakes we're playing, no, there's hardly any
anymore.
I mean, believe me, I would love to not play against anybody who's a professional poker player this summer, but unfortunately, you know, pretty much everyone's a professional poker player.
Did you run into any of the guys who we would know from playing big high stakes online, like David Benjamin or Patrick Antonius or those kind of guys?
Yeah. I mean, we played a bit against Benjamin. We played probably a couple times. Yeah, we were playing with Antonius a couple times. Lars Luzak, I don't know if you know who that is.
Yep.
You know, like Phil Galfond, Tom DeWine. I mean, it's pretty much
good.
The same collection you expect from most online games.
I'm curious, when I meet young poker players, what was the inspiration for you to decide this is what I want to do? Whether it's just as a hobby or to turn professional, what was it that made you say, as a teenager, you know what, I love this game, or I'm going to learn this game? What was it? Something that you saw in a movie, something on TV? What was it?
Well, I mean, the short answer is you know, money. But the long answer is basically, I mean, I just sort of, it's not like, you know, I made a decision when I first learned how to play poker that, like, this is going to be my life or anything like that. You know, it just sort of gradually, like, crept up on me, I guess. You know, I started playing, like, at the end of high school. Just got, I guess, really enamored with it by, you know, just seeing it on TV, seeing, like, you know, Moneymaker win the World Series and, you know, playing for, like, quarter games pretty much after school. Like, you know, we'd play like, $5 buying game at the pizza place. And that was, like, basically where I got started. And then, you know, eventually one of my friends, he had to hit a credit card and he put $50 online, and I got $20 from him. I gave him, you know, I saved up my lunch money and gave him $20 so I could play online poker. Of course, my parents knew nothing of this at the time, and and you know, I got really lucky early on. And I turned basically $20. I won a tournament for $1,700, and then I just sort of, it all just took off from there. And then I guess, you know, every few months I'd move up in stakes, and I just sort of just kept going and going until eventually got to the point where it just dawned on me that this is what I was going to do, I guess.
Well, the show is called 2 Months, 2 Million. It debuts this Sunday night at 8 o'clock Central Time on G4 TV. Jay Rosenkrantz and Brian Roberts and Emil Patel, and this is Donnie Stern. You'll see them all in a mansion in Las Vegas playing a lot of poker and trying to make $2 million in 2 months. Donnie, we appreciate your time tonight. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Have fun out there, Donnie.
Now, one of the reasons I asked him about the inspiration is because I thought he might mention the movie Rounders.
Ah, okay.
Jason, let's hear a little bit, a classic scene from what many people consider to be the all-time greatest poker movie.
I never told anybody this. About 8-9 months ago, I'm at the Taj, and it's late, and I see Johnny Chan walk in. And he goes, he sits 300, 600. And, you know, the whole place stops. Johnny Chan walks in. Everybody puts an eye on him. I mean, after a little while, you know, there wasn't a crap game going because all the high rollers are over there watching. And some of them are sitting there playing. When they're giving away their money, this guy says, oh, I played with a world champion. And you know what I did?
What?
I sat down.
No, you need 50, 60 grand to play right in that game.
Well, I had six, but I had to know.
What happened?
Played tight for an hour. I folded mostly, and then I made a score.
White aces of kings.
Rags. I had nothing. But he raised, and I just decided, you know, I don't care about the money. I'm just going to outplay the guy. I'm just going to outplay this guy this hand. I'll re-raise.
Re-raise? You play right back at him, huh?
Oh, yeah. And he just comes right back over the top of me, trying to bully me like I'm some tourist. I hesitate for like 2 seconds. I'll re-raise. And he makes a move toward his checks, and he looks at me. And then he looks at his cards, and he looks at me again. And he mucked it. I took it down. Did you have it? I'm sorry, John. I don't remember. I got up and I walked to the cashier. I sat with the best in the world. And I won.
Yeah, he won one hand.
Yeah, don't kid.
He won one hand. That's the thing I always think of now that I know a little bit more about poker than I did in 1998 when the movie came out. Because when you see that scene, you go, wow, he must be really good.
Yeah.
No, anybody can beat anybody in one hand. Anybody can bluff anybody off of one hand. There you go. They're thinking about making a sequel. I don't think they should.
No. It's hard to top one. That's an awesome movie.
Just leave it alone. Matt Damon says that everybody would probably come back. Edward Norton would come back. The director, John Dahl, would probably come back. Maybe John Malkovich could make his Russian accent a little bit worse than it was in the first movie. But that's the word on Rounders 2, anyway. All right, this portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch, just like the one that Dennis has on his hand now. This is one of the best quality sports watches in the world.
Absolutely is. I wear it everywhere I go, and everywhere I go, people ask me about it. A Reactor Watch, they say, compare it to any watch you want. They ask you to, regardless of price. They will match it right down the line there. This watch is just unbelievable. It's so durable, you can almost hit it with a baseball bat, and I think the thing would survive it on that. If you want a sports watch, if you want one you don't have to worry about, one that holds up, one that's easily read, I mean, it's right here. They even put the stem on the other side so it doesn't hit you up here on the wrist.
I like that.
I love that. So, anyhow, Reactor Watches, great, great company.
Thank you to all of our sponsors, Reactor Watch and the Poker Players Alliance and, of course, Poker Stars, where Dennis plays, and One Time Apparel, where Kevin Steffen sells great shirts and hats online at onetimeapparel.com. And also charitable events that are coming up. Dennis, you want to mention one that you're going to be involved in?
The 2009 Basket of Hope. It's going to be out at the Whitmore Country Club. It's going to be on the 22nd of September. Mm-hmm. Now, guys, this is really simple. This is a organization that takes baskets of goodies, toys and such like that, to kids that are in hospitals. How can you do any better than that? They still have some openings for team. It's over half filled up. Get on there, www.basketofhope.org. Check it out, guys. You need to come play in this. I will be playing in this.
Great charitable event. Dennis is involved in so many of those. We try to keep you updated on them. You can go to the website, thechipleader.com, to find out more. Next week, another guy from the November 9, Eric Buckman, joins us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris for Dennis Phillips. Have a great night.